Joining us now on the D&M Leasing Hotline is offensive line guru and the creator of the OL Masterminds Summit that you hear so much about. It is Duke Manyweather. Duke, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Now, first off, I just want to know, everybody has seen this OL Masterminds and some of the clips that come out of it. Every year there's viral content from it, and everyone sees, like, this is the collection where offensive linemen get better. Can you just talk about the purpose of the event, what you guys have coming up here soon, and how it all came to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think what people see is only a small glimpse. We put out publicly what we want you to see and not what the event fully is. And I think that exclusivity makes it even more special, because once you're in the room, there's just a whole nother dynamic on the learning, the collaboration, and just the spirit of offensive line. But we started it, really it started in 2017, but we officially organized in 2018. 2017, we just did it on Saturday mornings at the gym, and it was a matter of the veteran guys taking the young guys and myself, and we just walked and talked through the game. Fast forward to 2018, I was watching the NFL Top 100, and, Lang was on there. And Lane said, man, these pass rushers are getting so good. I think we need to figure out how to stop these guys. We need to get in the room and figure out how to stop these guys. So I immediately hit up Lane and I said, listen, you said that you want to figure out how to stop these guys. I said, let's put together a big O-line room and let's figure it out. Let's break down these pass rushers. Let's talk O-line. Let's talk routine. This year I wanted to the goal wasn't to have a whole bunch of people in the room. We've got a lot of college guys that come down, but we've got some really good pro guys coming this year. Of course, a ton of the Cowboys will be there, Tyler Smith, Tyler Booker, Guyton, Terrence Steele, a lot of the backups that are fighting for, their place on the roster are going to be there. But then we've got Joe Thomas, we've got Tristan Wirfs, we've got Lane, of course. Every year, we just try to make it the largest aggregation of O-line talent and experience in the world. And 2 days, we talk everything under the sun, from breaking down these defensive phenoms that are in the NFL now, to the lifestyle of what it takes mentally and physically and having a routine and the way you prepare and the way you handle different coaching, so that's really the whole, what it's all about, man, is just getting in a room and fellowship and making the position better through collaboration.
Well, and I know, you mentioned there how a lot of this started with kind of, word of mouth and guys talking to each other, and then this brotherhood came together. Tyler Guyton, I know when he was drafted, he talked about how that was the how he first became familiar with you, even before he came into the league, was that he had gone to OL Masterminds the year before. Guyton obviously was a guy who had a little bit of a tough rookie season, but he's gotten a lot of praise for the work he's put in this offseason from new head coach Brian Schottenheimer. What is your outlook for Guyton moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you this. I think it's really funny. There was this whole thing on Twitter this offseason about how me and Guyton had some type of beef and moved on. It was weird. Me and Guyton would send each other the tweets all the time and just kind of laugh at it. He's doing really well, man. He's doing really well. As I said early in the offseason, he had a lot to figure out. It was going to be up to him to figure that out if he wants to make a next jump. And we're still there. And I think he is figuring it out. Highly competitive, really doing things with intent and deliberateness. I expect for him to take a jump, man. As I said last year, I thought that him and Cooper Beebe were going to be fine, man. I thought that those guys are going to be really good, and I still feel like that. And you got to understand that development is not linear. There's going to be a new coaching staff. I like what Connor Riley's doing. And then Coach Chen as well. We met a couple of weeks ago for about an hour and a half. Just got on the same page with everybody in that room that I'll be working with, which is most of them, almost all of them. And really my whole goal for not only Tyler Guyton or Tyler Booker or Tyler Smith or Terrence or any of those guys, Cooper, is just to help make them be the most efficient, effective, and consistent player that they can be within their skill set. And that's really what it's all about, man. What I try to do is identify what makes each individual special and, you know, help them develop a skill set around those special qualities what make them unique. Because I think if you can really focus and hone in on that, it allows the guys to have a skill set that they can replicate down in and down out, day in and day out. And I think that's really what it's all about, man. I'm excited, you know, for this season. I think that not just with the Cowboys, but, you know, other guys that I work with, we really added some new tools to their toolbox. I'm excited to see. And the guys really have gravitated towards, you know, spicing up certain aspects of their game that, you know, hey, I'm really good at this. What if I did this off of it? And I think that's going to be a really cool thing to see, the maturation this season of some of these players.
Duke Manyweather from OL Masterminds joining us here on Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan. You know, you mentioned meeting with Connor Riley a few weeks back. I know that there's, in some instances, coaches will maybe get a little territorial, and they'll say, no, I don't want somebody from outside the building doing this, and they start drawing unnecessary lines. How encouraging was that to you that, you know, Connor Riley, Coach Chin, that they looked at and they said, hey, no, we want to be in front of you, and we all want to talk and get on the same page and value what you're doing with these guys?
Well, I think it's highly valuable for everybody involved. At the end of the day, for me, it doesn't change my life any. You know, I'm going to be who I'm going to be. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. But as I've said to you personally, you know, I won't work for anybody, but I'll work with whoever wants to work, you know, with versus for. And I think that is very encouraging that, again, I gave this example. I did an interview with CBS Sports, and they kind of talked about how, you know, Tyler Smith and Tyler Guyton kind of learned from Zach Martin. And the conversation came up, and I said, listen, in 11 seasons, Zach had 7 offensive line coaches, you know. And a lot of those guys, like Terrence, is at, you know, I think 3 or 4. Yeah. So when you look at that, not that I am the voice in the O-line room and their O-line coach, but I'm a consistent eye and ear for them, you know. And I think that's important because, you know, if you have a coach – that's new every single year, they're going to be asking you to do new things every single year. And sometimes you lose yourself and you lose what makes you good. And I think I'm just kind of the eye and the ear that constant reminder for these guys. Hey, this is what you do really well. Let's not get too far away from that, even within the context of what these coaching staff may want you to do. So me and Connor kind of talked about that. Like, hey, this is what this guy does really well. And we're just on the same page with everything. So I think it's very encouraging. One thing that I will say is Cowboys specifically, I think that they've got a plan in place that can really change the culture of this team. And I think that, you know, still within the organization, there's some aspects that need to be addressed that can fully change the culture. But I think for sure, like this staff is doing things a little differently. And I think there's a lot of energy around what they're doing. And the most important thing about the staff doing things differently and the energy around it is that the players are bought in to that. And I think that's important. If the players are bought in to the energy and into the difference in coaching and the way that players are handled, then that's half the battle. And then you got to start winning football games. Once you start winning football games, then the buy-in becomes even more. If you don't win, that's when things get tough. But I think that really the key is going to be up front and then making sure those guys stay healthy up front, and then making sure that as they find their groove and find their stride, that I think that offense will start to go.
Last couple of minutes here with Duke Manyweather. Duke, you mentioned Tyler Booker. Give us just a quick snapshot of what kind of player Cowboys fans can expect.
Physical mauler. Is highly skilled individual, skilled in pass protection, earth mover in the run blocking. And I think once you get to know Tyler, the accountability he holds to himself, the accountability that he will hold to other people. And I think when you lose what the Cowboys have lost in the last couple of years in terms of leadership with Tyron Smith, and then Tyler Biadasz, even to an extent, and then, of course, now this year with Zach Martin, you know, you've got some guys in place that can be leaders. You know, Tyler Smith is going to have to step up and really be a leader, which he has been. But then you got a young guy in Tyler Booker who will 100% lead naturally. That's who he is. He's going to lead naturally. And, of course, you don't expect him to lead that room as a rookie right away. But I think as he starts to find himself and figure things out, you know, along with, you know, him learning from Tyler Smith and Cooper Beebe with a year plus under his belt, playing next to Terrence. Terrence had a great offseason this offseason. He's looking back to normal. He's got that spring back in his step, which is good to see. I think that you're going to get, again, a really, really good addition to the Cowboys' offensive line rooms and Tyler Booker, not only on the field aspect because of those physical traits that we just talked about, but then eventually also in a natural leadership role as well.
Duke, thank you so much for joining us. OL Mastermind's coming up soon. You can follow Duke and get all those updates over at Twitter. You can look at BigDuke50. Duke, we appreciate you, man.
No problem. Have a good one.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not. Over to you, Bobby.
Which Cowboys are under the most pressure, and what even is pressure? Because there are apparently different definitions of it, as Choppy and I found out on Friday. Let's talk about it here in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing. You can check them out at dmautoleasing.com. So, Sean, late last week, we weren't even doing a pressure segment. We were talking about an NFC East roundtable discussion that had happened on ESPN, and it ended up kind of taking a detour onto the topic of Dak and the amount of pressure that he's under this year. And Choppy and I were disagreeing on it, and one of us, I won't say who, feels like he is not under much pressure at all this year relative to other years, and the other one of us felt like he's under some of the most intense pressure he's been under in his entire career.
Well, look, it all depends how you define the pressure. He's under a ton of pressure in my mind because in my mind, I'm like, if Dak Prescott doesn't have a great season, I'm finished with him. I want to start over. I'm finished in believing there's any chance that he's going to take them where they need to go, especially if he gets hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mind. Are the Dallas Cowboys, if they go 7-10, is Dak Prescott going to lose his job? The answer is no, because of the contract. Also, because they're not going to use a first-round pick. I don't believe that the Cowboys would draft a quarterback in the first round. That's my opinion.
So we had split over this. I had said that I think that this is about as intense of pressure as Dak can be under right now.
Like, he's got the most pressure in the division, I believe.
I think he has the most pressure internally put on by himself this year. I think he's got the most pressure in terms of where he's at in his career, and dude, it's got to start happening at some point. He's under pressure in terms of being able to stay healthy, like you were just talking about. And the other aspect of this is, because Choppy's contention was the only person really under pressure this year is Schottenheimer. And to me, because it's like, it's him, and then he's got to be the one to change minds. To me, if you've got Schottenheimer under pressure, Dak lobbied for that. And Dak, I think, is under pressure as an evaluator of the coach. Dak is under pressure as an ability to stay healthy, an ability to lead this team, and an ability for the front office to say, like, are you going to be able to do this? I think he's capable of doing it, but I think there's absolutely pressure there, too. This year is going to determine a lot in a number of areas.
I don't think anyone else besides you, and it's not an insult to you, you're a Cowboys insider for some reason.
Genius.
No one else knows or thinks, well, that's Dak's head coaching pick.
So again, that's, you know what I mean? And that's where Choppy and I were splitting. Choppy was looking at it from what are outside narratives. I was looking at it from, this is the most pressure on him from the front office of, this was your guy, so you need to show us.
Who's the highest paid player in the National Football League per year?
Dak Prescott.
That is a problem for Dak. perception-wise, it's not a problem for him in his wallet. I think it will hurt Dak that no one has leapfrogged him the way the Cowboys probably anticipated he'd be third. Oh, my God, look, he's already fifth. He's already dropped down to seventh on the highest-paid player list. Yeah, I'm smart on. To get out in front. No one has topped it. That is going to continue to be brought up on this show and all the other shows until someone does. So that's another pressure point. He's still the top paid player in the National Football League at $60 mil.
Okay, so let's take a
look. And then you always have the usual easy, there's always the most pressure on the Dallas Cowboys quarterback, sure. Which is true.
All right, let's take a look at some of the other players on the roster who are facing a lot of pressure this year, whether it be for their job, their reputation, whatever else. And you can weigh in on the Franklin Frankel Injury Attorneys Fan Text, 877-881-1053. That's 877-881-1053. First name up here. How much pressure is George Pickens under to perform this year? He's in a contract year. He's got a certain reputation. It feels like a pivot point in his career for, like, are you going to be viewed as a problem?
Yeah.
Because this is your chance to show it was Pittsburgh and not you. If it happens here, now we have a trend.
A lot of pressure.
And is it?
A lot.
Is the pressure?
For his own wallet.
I was going to say, is the pressure greater on him to perform or to behave?
That's a really good question. I'll say it's to behave.
Yeah, because I think most people would say, I can take something and turn him into that, but I need to know he can be a good teammate. Yeah. And I need to know that he can.
I'll say there's more pressure to behave.
Next one on this list, as we're talking about Cowboys under the most pressure. I think that he's, probably under more pressure to behave. And I think he's under.
Because 1 year of George having mediocre numbers, I don't think stops anyone from going, I got years of highlight reel. I know what he's capable of.
Only so many balls to go around. He's playing with CD. Like, there are ways to explain it. I think his actual statistical performance, pressure out of 10 is probably a 6 this year. I think to behave, it's a 9. Like, he's got to show that he can be mature.
I agree.
Next one on this list, and this would strictly be about performance. Another guy entering a contract year and who had a down year last season, Jake Ferguson.
Huge. A lot of pressure. My buddy who told me about Jake Ferguson before coming out, because he had done the Wisconsin research, is like, am I going to look good or bad on Ferguson? He was asking me that in Maryland. And I was like, well, ability-wise, attitude-wise, it's all there. Let's see what happens in terms of the health. He had the fumbling issue, and mentally, he did admit that injury rocked his world. Ton of pressure, because to me, if Jake Ferguson has the season that he had last year, he's gone. See you later.
I think it's there's a lot of pressure in terms of being able to get paid and show the Cowboys, like, I think they believe in him as a culture guy and everything else, but to show.
What deal would Jake have to cut you right now to sign him
with
an extension?
Less than Schultz. Like it would have to be less than Schultz, probably.
It definitely better be less than Schultz.
No, I know, but, like, if you're talking about the numbers that we were throwing around at the time for Schultz, where he was at, like, even with whatever inflation has occurred since then, I would say he's probably got to be 8 a year right now for me
Schultz
to get it done.
Schultz got 3 for 36.
Yeah, he needs to be 8 a year probably to get this done.
Right now.
Yes. Over on the Fantex 901, Pickens will overtake CD as the number one. There's more pressure on CD to stay number one on this squad.
No.
No, I think Pickens is better. And 254 says Diggs for sure. Let's go ahead and jump to that one. Trayvon Diggs. How much pressure is Trayvon Diggs under on a scale of 1 to 10?
I mean,
he's another guy that got paid, and it seems like...
Give me his health. Like, if he misses half the year, Shereen Williams keeps speculating almost the entire season, we don't need to be asking this question. And what is his out on the contract?
But does he attack his rehab the right way? So last year, he was slow to return, had the issues, because, as we've heard reported, Broaddus has mentioned it, Todd Archer's mentioned it, that they felt like Diggs didn't approach his rehab the right way. So he could be out for half the year, and that could still be something he did and something he showed them with his work ethic.
When can they get out of his deal? When would they get
probably
out of
next year.
Yeah.
If they needed
a lot of pressure on Trayvon Diggs. I think the fan base has turned. The fan base has turned from a tackling standpoint, from an attitude standpoint. He's Micah's right-hand man, so when they're doing the podcast and talking about leadership and Micah catches strays for that, Diggs is right next to him catching some of that Peyton Russell tree bark that comes from that. And I'm there with Diggs too.
I was gonna say, what's the roller coaster been like for you with Trayvon Diggs? Because obviously there was a time where everybody was very defensive over Trayvon Diggs because of the PFF attacks he was under for being a double move burn guy. And then I think people felt like, man, nope, they rabidly defended him. And now it feels like he's on the wrong side with most Cowboys fans. because of demeanor almost more than anything else.
I don't like Trayvon Diggs' attitude.
He used to, it felt
he
like
was an amazing interview we had with him a couple years ago at camp. Amazing.
He felt so much, I hate to say it, like I do worry, like, was there any bit
angry, of angry, bitter?
Was there any bit of Albert Haynesworth disease with him? Like, he got paid and it's like, cool.
Right.
We're good. And that he settled in that. Two more players here as we go under the, take a look at the Cowboys under the most intense pressure this season before we jump to a couple coaches. We can take these individually or we can take them as a tandem if you want. Tyler Guyton and Terrence Steele.
I mean,
I think Guyton is under more pressure than Steele is.
Well, Steele's one of these guys that the fan base a lot also want him replaced.
Yeah, I just view Steele
like
as
a make or break.
I think Steele feels like he maxes out. Like, A, I think they feel like he's maxed out every bit of talent that he has. He's reached a lot of it. And that's through hard work and everything else. And you're hoping that he can bounce back a little bit because you've seen it from him before. I think Guyton is under more pressure because that would be a feeling from fans of like, you had all this talent to tap into and you didn't.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I think Steele's going to catch more heat. I don't know about that. I don't know.
If they play the same exact way they did last year, at the end of the season, who are you complaining about more?
Guyton.
So that would feel like
he's got the higher pedigree.
And so Guyton
at the more important position.
Guyton would feel like more of the guy to me as well, because I think that there's been a lot of talk. Schottenheimer's gone out of his way to say, hey, he's been one of the top tier offseason workers. He's been great. Steele, again, year two and year three, he showed stuff that people didn't think he was capable of, that I think showed, okay, that guy worked hard. He's clearly getting everything he can out of himself. And there was a big thought within the Cowboys organization, I think, that Mike Solari regressed him. That hit, part of his regression was Mike Solari not reaching him the right way, and that Clayton Adams can bring some of that out of him. Guyton, it's like, it's just got to click, especially when you're a first rounder. Similarly, I mean, we can talk about that. Do you think there's any pressure this year on Mozzie, or is that already signed, sealed? We know what Mozzie Smith is.
Oh, I don't think anyone has any high grade expectation for Mozzie.
So he's at this, Guyton's then at this pivot point that Mozzie was probably at last year, at the entering the year.
No, I'm willing to be more patient with Guyton.
I think Guyton's going to be good. I still believe in that. Like, I wasn't deterred at all last year by the way he performed. I thought he was going to struggle.
And this is probably it for Mozzie, too.
Yeah, I would think so. Year three, like entering year three, this is around the time they got tired of Taco Charlton.
More pressure. I mean, is it a Ferguson-type pressure?
For
Mozzie? Or he has less? It's definitely less expectation. There's no expectation for Mozzie Smith here.
It's Tristan Hill, Taco Charlton. It's, can you turn into a starter? Or can you turn into somebody we consistently use? There's a little bit of that. And then here in the final minute or two, Brian Schottenheimer or Matt Eberflus? Year one. Because I think some people are going to be willing to give Schottenheimer a little bit of leeway. Who's under more pressure for the future of their career this year, Eberflus or Schottenheimer? Because Eberflus might be jeopardizing any chance he has of being a head coach again.
For the future of their career?
Mm-hmm.
Probably Eberflus.
Do you think Eberflus did too much bad in Chicago to even salvage it here?
Salvage it here? I'm not hiring Matt Eberflus as a head coach again.
Yeah, that's not what I mean. I mean, to do anything here that would salvage his career as a head coach somewhere else.
Oh.
Like, Quinn was able to salvage his career again.
Yeah, man. You know, it's so fickle. You can have an all-world defensive season. 3 years in a row, if you have great, great years, you'll become a candidate again. These NFL GMs and front offices, they're suckers, just like everyone else.
Are you giving, this came up with this last week a little bit, are you giving Schottenheimer any bit at all of a pass this year since he's trying to establish something new? Or do you just say, no, you've got to be better than you were last year or you're already under indictment?
I'm giving Brian Schottenheimer a little bit of a pass because of the roster questions.
And that just extends 1 year for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's never been a head coach. We cannot forget that we all called this a joke.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot forget that we all mocked this, made fun of it before Brian charmed us at the microphone.
Right.
Like we have to remember all that.
Gosh, could you imagine him back in the day? He would have been so great on The Bachelor. He would have just been charming all of them. He would have, if he was competing for the affection of a girl, he would have won that show easy.
B-Lo.
B-Belt.
Every single day at this time with our Cowboys insider, Roberto, here on DFW Sports Station, we have another NBA Youngboy ticket giveaway. And let's talk about the new head coach of the Dallas Stars with Mac Engel, our boy from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and Zoom after this. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Who could you stand to lose and who just can't live without for the Dallas Cowboys in 2025? Let's talk about it in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing. You can check them out at dmautoleasing.com. John Machota yesterday over at The Athletic was, as Choppy and I were talking about this last week while you're at it. This is, what would you say, is it mid-June or maybe like June 20th until July 25th or something like that, 5 weeks, is like it's peak list season. Yep. You come up with some lists. Every outlet right now is doing the top 10 of this.
Where's the Jeremy Fowler or athletic quarterback stuff?
So that is typically into July. So we'll get, in the next few weeks, we'll get that. We're going to get the ESPN, like you were we'll get the tiered list from Mike Sando for quarterbacks. From The Athletic, we'll get the ESPN top 10 at every position from talking to GMs and execs and everything.
Brackets.
And we'll get this awful NFL top 100 list that has been absolutely destroyed this year and upset me. This isn't good news. So I actually had talked with you about this yesterday, Sean. The NFL is doing their top 100 players like they always do. And typically it was like, all right.
Voted on by the players.
Yep. Typically you'll go, all right, on Thursday we have the top 10 here. And then the next Thursday, it's 100 to 91. Next Thursday, it's 90 to 81. And it's cool. We could see, all right, here's 10 new players dropped on us. And we could see these video clips. If a Cowboy's in there, if here's all these players around the league talking about them, it's always been good offseason content. The NFL has decided they don't care. And they want to destroy that content. Because this year, they are releasing the list two players at a time every weekday leading up to September 1st. When they will then drop the top 10.
So two a day.
They're going to give you 199 on Monday, 98 to 97 on Tuesday, 96 to 95. And it's going to just like be this slow leak without, like, I don't think there's any episodes tied to this of a hunt like the way they did in previous years.
But isn't that basically still 10 a week?
No, but it's the whole thing is there's not the TV show to go with it anymore. There's the one, the top 10 show is going to come out.
Only the top 10?
They're only doing the top 10 show. That and sucks. It's just the... It's like you're sitting on something. So if we're doing prep and we look in and go, all right, we know who this is. And they're like, we're just waiting and waiting instead of just getting the list and being able to react to all of it at once. But the first four players named on this list, Ladd McConkey, number 100, the receiver from the Chargers. Leonard Williams, the defensive lineman from the Seahawks. Aaron Jones, missed opportunity for the Cowboys, the running back with the Vikings. And then Drake London, the Falcons wide receiver, were listed on that. But we are in list season and John Machota had a good one yesterday, I thought, over at The Athletic. Which is the most important players for the Cowboys in 2025. And there were some players on it that I didn't instantly think would register. But we're up here on this list. So these are the top 10. Number 10, Kenneth Murray Jr., the linebacker from Oklahoma. The bane of Sean's existence in high-low, where he didn't know Kenneth Murray.
That's right.
But this is Kenneth Murray. He says this technically could be Murray, Marist Liufau, or Jack Sanborn. So this is just kind of representative of any linebacker that needs to step up and do something.
Yeah,
for the
they
Cowboys.
Want me like on in Chicago today to talk about Jack Sanborn. Whoa. And I was like, no, I can't.
No.
Give me something to say about Jack Sanborn, Bobby.
He's number 57.
That's it. You've been living out there in practice.
We did. There was one practice he had where he was really bad in coverage. Like, otherwise, he's just kind of blended in.
Yeah.
He had one practice when they were indoors during mini camp where Ferguson worked him consistently. He did not look like he was very strong in coverage.
Got a huge neck. Big time neck. Massive neck.
Don't you want that in your linebackers? I feel like linebackers, you want big necks.
Man, Van Der Esch had a big neck.
And he was good for a period.
Had a broke neck.
Yeah,
he was.
Exactly. Number 9 on this list, most important Cowboys from John Machota, Kyir Elam. And again, this is interesting the way that he's cutting at this. So he doesn't have...
What's the label?
It's the most important players for the Cowboys in 2025.
Okay.
So he's got Elam on here, which I think is interesting because the way that he looks at it is, you know Bland. When Diggs gets back, Diggs will start. So it's more just like... The veteran who's brought in here to seize the role, can he seize the role so that you're not having to go to Carson or one of these other unknowns. I can see the argument for it. I think Diggs being good is more important to them this year than whatever Elam gives them.
Elam's certainly on a preseason hype team. I know that.
Dude, he's made plays. I don't know if it'll stick, but he's made plays. It'll be interesting once Pat's... Don't hit the bell again.
Jeez,
damn it.
Bobby.
It'll be fascinating. This is just turns into the synonym game. It'll be fascinating to see if he can keep that up once pads go on. He'll be one of the ones that I'll watch once they have pads. Number eight, and arguably I think you could have hired Terrence Steele. He says Dallas's offensive line continues to go through notable changes. With Zach Martin retiring, Steele is the veteran leader of the group. He needs to play well, as the Cowboys will be working with a rookie next to him in first-round pick, Tyler Booker. And I do think he's going to have a bounce-back season. Is there any confidence level from either of you that he can gather himself back up, or are you just like, he probably is what he is at this point?
No, I have a confidence level, mainly because of your Terrence Steele homerism, that he can bounce back. I'm not totally just mailing it in on Terrence.
I was once the biggest Terrence Steele hater in Dallas. It was like Walchuk talking about Dak. I thought he was a complete turnstile. Never thought he'd turn into a stable pro, and he did.
Walchuk went back at you yesterday on G-Bag.
I don't know. I didn't hear it like most of the Metroplex, so.
Well, you sent us the clip. So Zach, he was listening.
Why are you just destroying my joke?
And well, because G-Bag's been...
I didn't hear it, though. I had to have somebody call me.
G-Bag's been killing the numbers, so I got to give him their praise.
I got the phone call from
New Orleans
marketing director Cody, who's like, did you enjoy that shot? He was like, what shot? He was like, it was just happening.
I thought it was Broadus when he called out. He was listening.
No, he was too busy to call yesterday.
I do think Steele probably should be higher than eight. He's more important than that.
Is it?
Yeah, because like he's such a swing player. Like, if he is really, really good, how much better does that make the line? If he's really, really bad, you know.
If you could pick one of them has to stay the way they played last year, and the other you get twice of what they were last year. Would you pick Steele or Guyton to be better?
Guyton.
Okay, I think I could live.
To be
with,
twice as good?
I think if I get Steele back to what he was like twice as good as he was last year, I think you're able to do a lot in the run game and soften things up for what you want to do attacking.
Give me a lockdown. Give me my lockdown left tackle.
Lockdown. Now you're telling me if he becomes like prime Lane Johnson, okay.
Number seven on this list, most important Cowboys in 2025, according to John Machado, Mozzie Smith, defensive tackle. This I understand just from the perspective of no one else is doing his job right now. He's the only one technically.
He doesn't even do his job.
Well, yeah, there's just that.
I think John needs to relable this. I don't know about the way he's categorizing these players.
Number six, George Pickens. He says up to this point, Pickens has appeared to be completely bought in on having a big year in Dallas. The Cowboys needed to improve their passing game and did so in a big way by trading with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now we get to the top five. Just ahead of him, CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver. Says Lamb remains the clear number one receiving threat in Dallas. As long as he's healthy, he should have another big year. I would put Lamb third. To me, like I'm glad they got Pickens. I still have no faith that they're moving the ball at all if CeeDee goes out. Like it would look like the Rangers offense in football form.
I mean, you move it much better than if Pickens wasn't here last year.
Right, it'll be improved, but Pickens showed last year when he gets double-teamed, which he would get all the focus if CeeDee was out, when he gets double-teamed, he is a below-average NFL receiver. And so that would be my concern there. Number four, Deron Bland. He says that the questions at cornerback make Bland even more valuable than usual. He can play inside or outside at a high level. With Jordan Lewis leaving in free agency, the expectation is that Bland will play more on the inside. Something that I don't think he loves. He's not refusing to do it, but I mean, he's talked about he'd prefer to be outside, also because outside corner money is different money, and this is a contract year for him. Number three, Tyler Guyton. He says that last year's first round pick didn't have a great rookie season. He has appeared to be putting in the work to have a much better year too. The Cowboys badly need that to happen. Tyler Smith protected Prescott's blind side for most of his career, or Tyron Smith protected for most of his career. The move from right tackle in college to left tackle in the NFL is not an easy one. And then obviously the top two, really easy. Number two, Micah Parsons. And then number one is Dak Prescott. And I look at this and I say, all right, if you're telling me that Dak is the number one most important player, which he is, and Micah is probably number two, because we saw the defense just looked wildly different when he was in there versus when he wasn't last year. If you look at that, then to me it says, all right, then 3 through 10 probably need to be everybody supporting Dak, or everything that's around Dak. Is that if Dak's number one, then I would then want 3 through 10 to be whatever's most important to having a successful year. And so that would be Lamb, It'd be, I'd probably throw Ferguson in this list of top 10 most important, because I think the offense is just different when he's playing well versus when he's not.
I could have Bland at three. I don't really look at it as everything supporting Dak. I look at it as, how good is my defense going to be? What would the secondary be without Deron Bland? With these Diggs questions, that's why I would have Bland that high and maybe even a little bit higher.
I think in terms
higher
of
than Guyton.
Pressure on a guy.
Bland higher than Guyton.
I mean, if you lose Bland right now, you can't cover anybody.
Yeah.
That's fair. No, that's fair.
More Stephon Gilmore rumors yesterday. It's like, I see Stephon Gilmore attached to the Cowboys one more time.
Mm-hmm. Man, the man tried to walk into the star to just be seen. Like, hey, guys, I'm still here.
And they're still said, like, turn around.
No, they're like, sir, get out of the building.
He'll be hanging out at our restaurant at the bar again.
Lure
in Oxnard, just hoping that we take him back home with us.
You guys drop me off at the team hotel?
Yeah.
You guys got a rollout there?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Now, the name on here that I think is missing that I would personally, I don't think, the more I thought about it, the more I didn't think his names were, some of them shocked me at first, like Mozzie. Then it's like, Mozzie is the only one at that position. He does need to, right now you are kind of left out to dry if he's not better. Kenneth Murray, similarly representing all the linebackers. To me, if there's so many questions in the secondary, and Eberflus is coming in here and changing the defense, and he's changing the style of the safety play to interchangeable. They need him to kind of do everything. Malik Hooker's got to be good. Malik Hooker's got to be good to protect the corners, the ones that you're not so sure about. And Malik Hooker's got to be good in terms of just covering over what I think are going to be some deficiencies from Donovan Wilson in the adjustment. Some to the extent that if they get to camp, they go, Marquise Bell fits this better, or Wanya Thomas fits this better, or man, we got Israel Mukwamu who can do some flexible things for us, then I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit of a competition there.
B-Lo,
D-Belt,
with our Cowboys insider, Bobby Roberto, every day at this time on your official home, in case you did not know, of the Dallas Cowboys and the Texas Rangers, and the 9 a.m. ticket giveaway, NBA Youngboy tickets to hook you up with, and I'm going to win you some money with the Dallas Mavericks. After this, plus Brett Boone at 920 on 105.3 The Fan.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to get to the Cowboys questions that matter as we waste away waiting for training camp. But Corey, you may or may not have spilled the beans about something almost 2.5 hours ago.
Yep.
So we wanted to give you another chance to re-rack what's going on right now.
All right. Yeah, especially since I racked him with this. Our friend Reginald Atatula is doing a 12-hour radiothon today, raising money for the Houston Food Bank.
Yeah.
And that's an awesome cause, man. And Reggie, while he was here with us, he always was like, hey, donate to your local food bank. That was always his place. We all have a different, you know, thing that we're interested in. Kevin, you've always been with NAMI and, and pushing for them. And so Reggie would always drop that out there. So if you want to help contribute, here's what we got from him yesterday. Guys, I'm planning at noon o'clock, that is, to change the listeners or challenge the listeners that if they donate $50 and send me confirmation of the donation, I'll say any FCC allowable message, no obscene or advertisements they want. Might be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So he asked us if we would like to put it in front of our Dallas audience. I said, absolutely, man. That sounds like an awesome idea. By the way, don't forget Chris Arnold is out at AT&T Stadium, the stadium that Kevin's mom built with Carter Blood Care, as they are doing a blood drive, and the first 1,000 donors, $50 gift certificate and tickets to Ravens Cowboys preseason game. So that's happening too. But
and you get to help people.
Yes, that's awesome. He's out there until 1 o'clock. Just saying.
So you could go there
yeah.
and still donate to Reggie and then get your donation back essentially with a gift card and preseason football tickets. And you get to see CA and the cheerleaders.
The thing I don't know, Kevin,
I like it.
I need, what's the short link? Do we have a short link?
So if you text Sports Radio 610, Sports Radio 610 to 71777. So if you're looking for that, text Sports Radio 610 to 71777.
All right.
And if you text at least $50, if you donate at least $50, Reggie will say the sentence you want. Corey already has one in mind. I also have one in mind, so I need to get to donating. By the way, They have already raised more than $11,000.
Good for them. That's awesome, dude. And our first one we ever did, I think we raised about $4,500 the whole run.
That is true.
Yeah.
So,
and then it grew from there.
Already destroying us. All right.
Second for charity.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
And that's how you get more.
Hey, however you get the money to donate.
Exactly.
None of my business. All right. So, Cowboys questions that matter. Don't shake your head at me, Alec. While we waste away waiting for training camp, we wanted to do this the last couple days. Too busy, too much content. So let's run it out now. My question for both of you guys. Do you think CeeDee Lamb could hold this NFL record at the end of the season?
Oh, I don't know.
Let me tell you what it is before you go any further.
Well, all right then.
Okay, well, just what's your initial thought?
Yes.
Yes.
But
okay.
Also no, because I think George Pickens is probably going to cannibalize a little bit of this.
Okay.
I think I'm right.
That actually is kind of relevant to this, yes.
I'm kind of guessing, actually, at this point.
So CeeDee Lamb has 496 career receptions going into the season.
That's a lot.
That is. If he can get to 500 this season, that would make him just the fifth player in NFL history to get 500 or more career catches by the age of 26.
Wow.
Here are the other ones. Larry Fitzgerald, Randy Moss, Jarvis Landry, and DeAndre Hopkins. The record.
They're all pretty good players.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a different level with the first two, but yeah.
I don't know. D-Hop was D-Hop one of those dudes we were considering.
So the NFL record by most catches by the age of 26 is 540. It feels safe to assume that CeeDee Lamb can get more than 44 catches, right?
Yes, absolutely.
However, Justin Jefferson has 495 catches.
Oh.
So he is one behind CeeDee Lamb. So it stands to reason that both of these will quite emphatically break the record this season. So my question is, will CeeDee Lamb hold this NFL record at the end of the season?
Hold the record.
Hold it.
Oh.
Not have it for a minute. Have it at the end of the season.
Somebody said most drop passes. Come on, man. What are we doing here? I think he could if the running game isn't good. If the running game's not good, then CeeDee Lamb's going to get more targets because he essentially becomes part of your running game in your short passing game. That's how Michael Thomas got as many receptions as he did. It was short passing game. And a lot of people take shots at Michael Thomas. That was the Sean Payton offense. That was the Sean Payton. That was Drew Brees' ability to throw at that point. His arm was starting to fall off a little bit, and short passes. He's still very accurate. So I do think that he can. I think he will.
Okay.
I think he will. I think he's gonna have a stack of receptions this year, man.
Alec?
I think he will. I'm trying to think about the teams themselves. The offenses, the quarterbacks running the offenses. I think you have the better quarterback in this scenario just because we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy play actual NFL football yet. And then I started asking myself, and I kind of hate this, who's going to be playing from behind more this season? That's going to induce more throwing to your playmaker. In my mind, I would say that probably Dallas is going to end up playing from behind a little bit more because maybe Justin Jefferson does have another 97-yard touchdown with Kevin Harlan losing his mind on the broadcast, you know. So he doesn't need to do all of that. CeeDee Lamb, we've seen him need to do that a little bit more recently, so I think he's got the better situation to do it.
All right. Now, Corey, I want to start with you here because
I dare you.
Okay. I agree with this. Because you have been really upfront about ideas and questions about this, so I'll start with you. What does the Eberflus defense look like?
Okay.
Like, what do you think it will look like?
I think Osa's probably going to have his best season.
Okay.
Because his defense is really reliant on his position. You want somebody that can hold up next to him, like that. You definitely want that. You want somebody to do their job there, but Osa's going to be a key component to that. I think Micah is going to get a lot of pressure off the edge. I think they're going to give him many opportunities, but I don't think it's going to be blitzing pressure. He's going to be defensive end in a 4-3 type of situation.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to get a lot of that, and I don't know how much linebacker he's going to play. I do think the fact that they beefed up their linebacking crew, Kenneth Murray is a bigger linebacker, Jack Sanborn's bigger linebacker, they made them bigger because that's what this defense calls for. And if you're too light there, you're going to get run over like the Cowboys have for the last 3, 4, 7 years.
That's true.
So they got beefier in that respect. And that's something Parcells did too. You know, he was running a 3-4 kind of hybrid with Zimmer here. But they did get, he was like, look, Datwin, Dexter Coakley, got to give him credit. Like, they're working hard, but and then I think you're going to get tough secondary play.
Okay,
the secondary for the Bears, dude, they were fun to watch last year. If you didn't get a chance, they were fun to watch, and I hope that Diggs is able to get into that mentality and be a tough dude along with it.
Yeah,
because I think your safety play and your sec. So I think it's going to be a good, strong, stout defense. A lot of people are saying right now that it's old, it's ancient, it's dinosaur, but I think I saw it last year play pretty well. And all it needs to do, it is bend, don't break, but all it needs to do is make sure that not a lot of points are scored on them and that they can give the ball back to their offense and let them do their work. That's going to be the key for them.
For me, there's a reason that a guy like Jack Sanborn comes to the team and is so successful in this scheme is because it's built on effort and intensity.
Yeah.
It's not exactly built upon, okay, we need 4 cornerstone players that are going to be, you know, highest paid at their position that we know what they are. We're going to have enough guys that know their job well enough to where things are going to look consistent even when you do have to make some substitutions across the defensive line. Whenever a linebacker gets banged up and you need to fill in and you need a Marist Leofau to step up in his second year, it's going to look a little bit more consistent. So I think that it's going to be intense. I think you're going to get takeaways too. You know, whether it's via the interception, the forced fumble, what have you. I think if you were missing the Dan Quinn style a little bit more, not so the finesse aspect of it, but the intensity, playing with your hair on fire and getting takeaways, I think you're going to see a little bit more of that.
Okay. You guys mentioned 2 different people who would qualify for this. So I want to skip to this question.
Skip.
Which Cowboys player makes their first Pro Bowl? So you mentioned Leofau, you mentioned Osa, neither have ever made a Pro Bowl. Donovan Wilson, George Pickens, Trent Sieg. There's a variety of options. Who would be the Cowboy that you would pick to make their first Pro Bowl?
Tyler Booker, as a rookie.
I mean,
as a rookie right guard, I think he's going to do it.
If that happens, then that's probably a pretty good sign. If it's him or Tyler Guyton,
dude,
that feels like a good sign.
And Sean brought it up this morning. He was like, Corey Majors thinks the offensive line for the Cowboys is the linchpin. Like, it's whether or not I agree. I'm right there. If Guyton was to get a Pro Bowl selection, we freaking did it. Like, every Cowboys front office person should just walk around high five and also hold the middle finger up at the same time going, you guys didn't believe, but it took us 1 full year to get the real version of him. So I'm going to go with Booker. Still, I'm going to go with the other head of Osa. Yeah.
Okay. Look, that'd be
great. Although I do need Osa to have a great season.
For sure. Who do you need to have a great season more?
Tyler Guyton.
Okay. Alec. Cowboys player who will make their first career Pro Bowl this season. And I know it's a Pro Bowl games and all that. Like, ignore that part.
It's just a glorified fan vote at this point. My mind goes to George Pickens immediately because all he needs to do is have a couple of catches that make the SportsCenter top 10, you know, for maybe 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And then he's going to get enough votes to where people are like, oh my God, he's got a real quarterback now. He's making these crazy catches on national television. I just think he's going to get the volume in terms of viewership and actual pass catching, which are not related at all, but they're going to work in this scenario for him to get enough votes.
Okay. I'm intrigued by that answer. Now, I know we're going pretty defensive intensive today. Okay. There will be plenty more questions. We got a long time still till training camp. Will the third time be the charm for Mozzie Smith? He'll now have his third defensive coordinator in 3 years, with each having a different concept of his particular position.
Man, you're asking me to answer.
Well, the way you just said that leads me
I was going to say think so.
Okay.
But there's I thought he had a better year last year than he had his rookie season.
I'd agree. Still not good, but I agree.
But it was better, so he progressed.
He did.
I think he can progress again. Okay. I just don't know where the ceiling is for him now. If the floor, let's just assume the floor was his rookie season.
Okay.
And he'll never be at the floor again.
Okay.
Until maybe he retires.
Yeah.
I don't know where's the ceiling, and is the ceiling really low? And because the floor seems so low to start.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of the things that were problems for him were motivation, desire to do it on his own, like those types of things. And you're not going to get better if you don't have those things. So did that change for him? And how long is he away from contract season? What, 2 more years? He's got.
Yeah, he'd have one after this year. He'd have 1 more year, and then you'd have the option, which right now feels like. This
yeah. Is, so I think he will be better, but it's not. It doesn't take a lot to be better.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't have that far to go.
Alec?
Right there with Corey, where it's like it's kind of hard to go backwards. I feel like any improvement is going to look magnified with him, which is not an indictment. It's not a shot at him. I think that gives him a good base to impress us, though, because I do think that even being average is going to be a success in our eyes. I know at the end of the season, whenever playoffs are over, we're going to be like, well, he still wasn't good enough to warrant his draft position and everything, but we're going to be happy that he did play better. So I do think he's going to step up.
If he's average at one tech,
I'm happy with that because they've swung and missed so many times.
Me too.
And the one time it felt like they were going to at least have a feasible player at that position, maybe two times that you say with a couple of the veterans that they brought in, Gerald McCoy, if his knee didn't explode in practice, then maybe you had a success at that position for one time and one time only. But outside of that, I'll take anything average from him this year for sure.
Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Ramona Shelburne on the NBA beat just said the Lakers are not consulting with LeBron James this offseason. Are we about to see him on the move as we are now 56 and a half minutes from the start of NBA free agency? This is exciting, boys.
It sure
what
is.
Are the Mavs going to look like in 24, 48, 72 hours? We're all over it. Coming up at 5:20. I got a LeBron trade idea for you. I think it gets it done. I want to know if you boys pull the trigger on this. Here's Wolchuk with some football.
One update with our Rangers. We're going to talk with CY here in about 20 minutes, but Sands just put out there that Evan Carter currently not with the team due to personal reasons. So I hope everything's okay with Evan and the Carter family. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it ends up being a positive thing that something's going on, but hopefully all good with Evan Carter, and he's not gone for long. But let's get into your NFL sounds of the day. We'll start in our own backyard. Netflix has put out the trailer, fellas, for Jerry Jones' new docuseries. This is going to be a 10-parter, The Gambler and His Cowboys. Jerry Jones' docuseries, America's Team. Here is the trailer.
The road to a championship is never paved smoothly. It's always paved with peaks and valleys.
Is a soap opera 365 days a year.
Texas is football country. The hole in Texas A&M so God could watch his favorite team, the Cowboys.
When I bought the team, I was Darth Vader.
Dallas fans aren't happy.
Last year, they were 1-15.
I said, Dad, I don't know anything about running a football team. And he looked me in the eye and he said, neither do I.
We were gambling my family's whole fortune, so I had to take risks. And it started with Jimmy Johnson.
Get part of this group. Asthma lot. Get over there on that other field and have some asthma.
He made practice hell, so the game is heaven. We were ready.
Go Tide.
All of a sudden, it was a runaway train.
Oh, baby.
Everywhere we went, they were icons.
We played hard, and then we played hard.
With that success, you also get disruption.
Police officer came to me,
and they pulled the gun.
Open the door right now!
Jerry is that disruptor, that innovator.
You're not much of a gambler unless you're going against the popular trend.
No one ever thought Jerry had the guts to fire Jimmy.
You don't know half the stuff that was happening.
Playing for the Cowboys is different.
The most valuable sports franchise in the world.
No matter what they say, they can't prepare you. You just got to experience it.
And the only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
We do it our way, baby.
Oh, that end line just kind of ruined it for me.
We did it our way, baby. I mean, it's hard to not watch that. And, like, the nostalgia, I'm definitely going to eat this entire thing up. It's going to be eight episodes. I'm sorry, I said 10. It's 8 45-minute episodes. That's going to come out August 19th. It's going to feature Jerry, of course, Troy, Michael, Emmett, Dion, Jimmy, Barry. There'll be other players as well. But it's hard to not even just watch that trailer, and we'll see what else they get into. But the first 5 years of your career as owner of the Cowboys was magic. But you've owned the team now for how long? And we've got to go back to those years. We're not interviewing Tony Romo hadn't featured here. Mm-hmm. DeMarcus Ware hadn't featured here. Mm-hmm. Tyron Smith, Dak Prescott, Jason Witten. I can keep going on and on of the careers that unfortunately don't have the championship glory that they're going back now 30 years to interview. And a part of that, a big part of that, is because of the person who this is being made after. So it's like I'm pumped for this, but it's also just kind of another example and reminder as a Cowboy fan, like, holy crap, we've got to go back to 1995 for the last time we tasted any glory.
It's brilliant take, Woolchuck, because, I mean, you're honoring and celebrating Jerry Jones and boosting his ego, and I think his ego is the biggest reason they haven't done anything in 30 years because he wants to do it his way. I mean, that's Nico Harrison-level rage bait to see that at the end of the clip. Please. Spare me, you know, and I'm probably going to watch it because I'm going to try to farm content out of it. But it just hurts, you know, like you did it your way. What does that mean ultimately? That means that the entire world has been telling you you're not a very good GM for 2.5 decades, and you're like, I'm going to do it my way. You would rather do it your way than give the fans what they want, which is team success. You know, your way just wins regular season games. It's a tried and true process. And it doesn't matter how many great players you bring in here, your way is to maximize profit over a decade-long period. And that means never going for it in a way that might put you in the cellar for 5 years. The Eagles aren't scared of being in the cellar for 5 years because they're trying to win as many Super Bowls as they can.
Yeah.
And you know what? He has now led the NFL, Jeffrey Lurie has, in cash spending for 4 consecutive years at $300 million. That's how much the Eagles spend over the last half decade, every offseason trying to make this team a champion. The Cowboys spend 40, 60. It's not even the same level of commitment, you know? So, cool. Good show. I hope it's not like Jordan's Bulls show where it's just about celebrating this one guy because you can see right through that. I need some real journalism here to keep me hooked.
Well, this could also be the final thing that you see for Jerry, and I don't mean to sound morbid, but this is the documentary. This is the series. This is when
the legacy.
The legacy, you know, when people go back and they, you know, it's like how we used to celebrate the 30s for 30s. You know, we go back, we watch all those, the Pony Excess and the U and all. And this, you know, we kind of relive that. This has very much like a vibe to it that this is Jerry's documentary about his life.
Yeah.
In that time when it was a much happier time when it came to, you know, winning championships and stuff like that, other than, like you guys have said, right now it's about the money that they've made. You know, it's not about the championships that they've won. And that's unfortunate.
No, and the 817, hey, it's his money. Everyone sounds like an HOA. It's your house, but I'm going to tell you what to do. Can someone tell you how to raise your kids? It's nice to win, but that's...
Thanks, buddy.
That's
Thank you.
The take that Jerry's going
Do you have anything
with.
To add to the conversation?
I mean, yeah. He obviously, it's a family business. They've done a lot of great things for the NFL, done a lot of great things in terms of
He's made the other businesses. NFL. He's made the other NFL owners billionaires.
Just as an owner,
yeah.
There's zero problem.
No,
there.
He's made the Rooneys billionaires. He's made the Browns in Cincinnati. These family, the McCaskies in Chicago. He's made these people billionaires because of the vision that he had for television and marketing and things like that. And
in terms of this documentary, Broadus, like, I didn't get to obviously live through a lot of these this glory time.
That was tough.
So I'm fired up about watching it.
Yeah.
Will you make this appointment television for yourself?
Oh, no, absolutely. Okay. Because, when he was having success and the Cowboys were having success, we were on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were trying to – he was battling San Francisco every year.
And you were in Green Bay.
And we were trying to battle him in Green Bay. And, unfortunately for the Cowboys, they had a draft that just took them backwards, and they didn't have replacement players ready to go. They'd always get you with their depth, you know, and their coaching. And they had a draft where it went south on them, and then all of a sudden Troy gets hurt. Michael gets hurt. You know, everybody starts, Moose Johnson, all these guys start to like fade, and they didn't have anybody in place ready to go. And we were able to jump up in there for a couple of years, you know, back to back Super Bowls, win one. But yeah, it was difficult. That was a hard team to battle because everything about it was difficult to deal with the players, the coaches. That was one of the best I'd ever seen.
Yeah, and the 2-1-4 said the 49ers haven't won a Super Bowl either. And thank goodness, you're 100% right. But that's
been
also
there a few times.
Bit of a loser's mentality there, right? Yeah, they've been to three. They've been to three Super Bowls.
Yeah.
As Cowboy
how many
fans
NFC
right
championship
now,
games?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'd be like, we are starved just to see the Cowboys play on a championship Sunday. Just make the Final Four. It would be freaking euphoria.
So, I mean, who are these fans? Like, explain yourself. What is being a Cowboys fan to you then? Just being like, awesome, go. Like, this is sports culture. It's debating what's in the best interest of your team so they can win another championship.
Right.
Apparently, you're just like, you're enough of a sports fan that you're listening to sports radio, but you just want to kick back and let everything happen and just kind of enjoy the ride. I mean, that's cool. It's just a spectator, right? Sports radio is about debating and having takes and trying to have a community around this thing where
I think,
we can commiserate and celebrate.
I think it's we've seen over the years, and it happens every year. I kind of feel like when we get to that final game and maybe Zach and I are doing that post-game show, that every year it's kind of kicked a little further down the road of like, nah, we're not doing this. They lose a little more. They lose a little bit more of the fan that's like, listen, I'm not here for the 12-win regular season and the second overall seed,
right,
and they go get bounced by Green Bay in the first round of the playoffs. There's a lot of fans that are against that now.
And then do absolutely nothing different with the way that you run the team.
All righty, that's great stuff. CY is walking up to our broadcast position. We'll step aside and get ready to talk with the Rangers president of baseball operations coming up next here. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hour 2 of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. We are live in Arlington at the ballpark, Comerica Backyard. Join us out here in center field on the suite level if you're coming on out. Should be a good one. Tomorrow is Jacob deGrom replica jersey night, though, as they open a series with the Orioles tonight. And it'll be good times. We need some wins. Drop 2 of 3 to the Mariners over the weekend. All the games went to extra innings. And unfortunately, the Rangers just did not have enough punch to win the series. Could have swept them. All right, so is that a positive? I don't know. But, I mean, Leiter and Rocker were pretty dang good, and Corey Seager's now swinging a hot bat. So I'm going to continue to force myself to be optimistic I guess maybe double digits back of the division and 6 games of the wild card. Until we're short of that, Wolchuk, you hold me to this, I'm going to remain positive.
Perfect. I want you to remain positive.
Pre-game.
We need the positivity.
I'm doing my best. Pre-game's coming up at 6:30, first pitch at 7:05. You know how hard it is for me to stay positive. But
I know.
On this next story, I'm positive this is an advantage for the Cowboys as their secret weapon for building the offensive line is perhaps a guy here, Duke Manyweather, that we've been hearing quite a bit about in, I don't know, maybe the last half decade or so. He has this offensive line masterminds program, and a lot of the best offensive linemen around the NFL talk about what Duke Manyweather has done for them. So joining us now to talk more about this is a guy who wrote an article about Duke today, Garrett Podell, CBS Sports, joining us now here on
the
Fan. Good afternoon to you, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. You know, just trying to enjoy the downtime here before camp out in Oxnard, having a great day.
It seems like a few years back we started hearing so much about Duke. Give us some background. How did he burst on the scene so quick, and where's he come from?
Yeah, that's a great question. He was a D2 football player out at Humboldt State in California, and you know, kind of a shorter stature guy in the height department. He kind of realized the NFL probably not for him as a player, which is why he kind of in college honed in on his technique and kind of his three pillars that he told me when I spoke to him on the phone: mind, body, and craft. And so he's kind of been honing those in, and he would train guys before the draft, after the draft, but kind of his first big client was Philadelphia Eagles Pro Bowl right tackle Lane Johnson. And, you know, he has this summit, Offensive Masterminds Summit, each year in July, and kind of gets all the top offensive linemen from around the league, and they kind of train for a couple days. He also does the one-on-one regular training that I wrote about him doing with the Cowboys. But when he was watching the NFL Top 100 back in 2018, just to support his guy in Lane to see where he would land, he noticed that some of the defensive players were saying, yeah, you know, we get together, hang out in the summer. Von Miller organizes a sack summit, and that really helps us. And so he picked up the phone and called Lane and said, we have to do something like that for the O-line. So his first kind of big summit at the time in 2018, that summer, had Chiefs All-Pro right tackle Mitchell Schwartz, then New Orleans Saints Pro Bowl left tackle Teron Armstead, Buccaneers Pro Bowl center Ryan Jensen, former first-round pick and DJ Fluker. So that summit's kind of built. And then after that kind of first big event in 2018, that kind of really grew his clientele list. But when Zach Martin committed to working with Duke kind of in the late 2010s, that's really when he got the hook with the Cowboys. Because he told me when Zach speaks, people in Dallas listen.
I believe it, man. And when it comes to the offensive line that he's currently working with now, I think it's awesome. He's working with all five, as your article illustrated. Specifically, Tyler Guyton, I think that's a question all of us have right now going into year two. What were you able to gain about that? Because it sounded like prior to the draft, I know at least the Twitter world thought maybe there was some beef between Duke and Guyton and they had stopped working together.
Yeah, that I brought that up with Duke, and he thought that was really funny because Duke himself, he did tweet, you know, it's all up to Tyler Guyton to see how he's going to be. And so a lot of people took that as, you know, Duke saying Tyler doesn't have what it takes. But Duke was kind of saying that is kind of meaning Guyton is approaching it with the kind of mindset and aggressive determination that he needs to kind of take the next step up. Because Duke kind of described to me, there's a few levels of guys in their development that he's worked with. There's the obsessives who eat, sleep, breathe about it. They're texting him, hey, give me a film clip. Let's work on this, that, the other. There's the people who just do what you tell them to do. And then there's the bare minimum guys. So he kind of challenged Tyler Guyton to say, which one of those are you going to be? And, you know, Zach, I know you were out at Cowboys minicamp OTAs. And when we spoke to Tyler about his diet and kind of cleaning up some of the things he's working on, that Guyton, at least for now, it seems like he's trending toward being on the obsessive side with it. And when I spoke one-on-one with Guyton at his locker at the end of mandatory minicamp, I said, so what are you doing with Duke? And he said, really, it's my posture, the stance, start and finish, kind of bowing his back and make sure he has more balance. Because a lot of the issues, he had 14 penalties last year, which is tied for the second most in the NFL. A lot of that he kind of attributed to not being comfortable and feeling like he just wasn't balanced and out of position. But he feels like the work he's doing now with Duke in the summer is really helping him improve that. And Duke himself reiterated that to me, saying he's being able to maintain his posture underneath kind of the load that he carries at 6'7", 322 on that side. That's really kind of what they've been focusing on.
So is Manny Weather sort of on the same page with the Cowboys coaches and how they want things to be done? They're sort of in lockstep with that, so they're not learning or teaching two different styles?
That's what it is now. Now, I can tell you, like, example of yesteryear versus this year. This year, yes, Duke met with Connor Riley, the new offensive line coach who came over from Kansas State, and his offensive line assistants in the middle of June, and they spoke for about an hour and walked through stuff. And Duke told me, now we're on the same page. They see stuff through the same kind of set of eyes. So they went over, here's the techniques, here's what we want to have certain guys work on. So they're in line with that. Now, when Mike Solari, who was the last offensive line coach under Mike McCarthy, I asked Duke if he would call this a philosophical agreement. He called it simply kind of a cookie cutter technique teaching. But basically, he said Mike Solari would coach Terrence Steele to just use your length and body and size to kind of win against other defensive linemen. And he didn't really put a whole lot of stock into being detailed with the handwork. At least that was what he was coaching Terrence. Versus Duke was telling Terrence, if you have a plan with your hands, here's where you put them when they're rushing you inside, outside. That can really give you a step up. And that's something Duke and Connor Riley spoke about. And they're on the same page, just really kind of getting that handwork being a major focus for Terrence Steele going forward. And Duke thinks that's going to be to Steele's and the Cowboys' benefit going forward.
So when it comes to the rest of the offensive line, what stood out about Cooper Beebe, year two at center, and now he's reunited with Coach Riley, who came from K-State?
Right. And that, Duke said to me, is going to be so massive, because he said, you know, a lot of people, when they think about the offensive line position, right, they're like, oh, that's just a bunch of big dudes. You just got to help coaching to push. But no, Duke's big thing that he impressed upon me is just how individual working with each offensive lineman is, and how different that can be, and how beneficial it is to really treat each guy kind of as their own unique entity, even though when you think of an offensive line, you think of it as just a cohesive mass of humanity, right? So with Cooper, it's making sure that his offhand, so the one that's not snapping the ball to Dak Prescott, kind of being able to use that more to his advantage, and it not being a neutral asset, but being he can be an aggressor with that offhand the second he snaps the ball and gets into doing that, and then just filling out kind of the major details. But he really impressed upon me with Cooper Beebe. It's that offhand and really that becoming a weapon.
Hey, Garrett, you know, as you look at this offensive line and with the new coaches, you know, really on, you know, on that side, how much do you think there will actually be a competition, say, at the left tackle spot? Is this one of those things that where Awesome Richards is, if he's not better, well, okay, then he won't be starting. But does he have a legitimate chance, you feel, if he outplays Tyler Guyton?
That's an interesting question, Brian. I feel like, right, in theory, you'd think the answer is yes, given what Brian Schottenheimer's told us about everyone's got to compete and things like that. But then we've also heard Schottenheimer say, after drafting Tyler Booker is a day one starter. So Schottenheimer also clearly has guys in his mind that are penciled in as a starter. Now, I know Guyton did have the 14 penalties and was certainly uneven last year, but kind of based on the work Guyton's put in this offseason and has continued to show, I would be surprised if there was any real competition at that left tackle spot. I feel like it's certainly Guyton's to lose. And also over the course of minicamp and OTAs, when we would ask about Tyler Booker, how's he coming along as a rookie, Schottenheimer would go out of his way to say, hey, guys, I just want you to know TG's working really hard and he's doing everything we're asking him to. Yeah. So Schottenheimer brought up Tyler Guyton unprompted a few times in his press conferences this spring, which that also kind of indicated to me he's been impressed about what Guyton's been doing this offseason.
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports, with us here in the G-Bag Nation. One other thing that stood out to me was the referencing of PFF from Duke. He doesn't like the way they do some of these grading, the grading stuff. What can you share with us about that?
Yeah, that was the topic that when I spoke with Duke that he got the most fired up about, the most kind of emotion I was able to get out of him. I was simply reading to him kind of the data about Terrence Steele since he's come back from the ACL-MCL tear since 2023, because I was using True Media, which has PFF data plugged into it. So I was looking at quarterback pressures allowed, and so they have that Terrence Steele's 94 quarterback pressures allowed since 2023 are the most in the NFL. Now, they do grade him well as a run blocker. They have Terrence Steele's 78.9 run blocking grade for 2024, was 12th in the NFL, so he's been solid against the run, but that kind of mobility maybe still working his way back from the knee. Duke told me that Steele's looked great on the knee this summer, but he said about PFF, he feels like they don't factor in quarterback movement, so he thinks PFF is just charting if the quarterback is like near, let's say Terrence Steele, for example, near Terrence Steele, and the guy he's blocking starts to slowly come around the edge, that maybe they're charting that as a pressure. And so basically he said to me, it may appear that Terrence Steele's chartered for 94 pressures? And then he said, or whatever the F it is, but it ain't that. He said, because if that was really true, then he would be gone. He would not be on the team. So he said himself, Lane Johnson, Teron Armstead are trying to get a meeting on the books with PFF to kind of recalibrate how they chart what offensive linemen, what that means when they give up a quarterback pressure.
I love it, Garrett. What else can you tell us? Is he so good that like NFL teams are going to start hiring? Should the Cowboys want to hire him?
Well, he told me in the past, kind of before he got to this current like trainer of all, and specifically with the Cowboys offensive line, that he had done some consulting with Dallas in a particular role. And when he started out, yeah, he wasn't kind of sure what his vision was going to be. But now the facility he uses in Frisco, he used to rent it. Now he has a partnership stake in it. So he's very much got equity in the facility he uses in Frisco to train. And I think he's really happy doing what he's doing, training these guys. I mean, he lit up when he was talking to me about two non-Cowboys that he trains right now are Pro Bowler Rashawn Slater from the Los Angeles Chargers, their left tackle, and Trey Smith, another Pro Bowler from the Kansas City Chiefs, both dudes who are entering their last years of their contracts. Trey Smith just got the franchise tag from Kansas City this offseason, and he was just lit up about how he was able to have Trey Smith and Rashawn Slater working out at his spot in Frisco all the way up until mandatory minicamp, and both those guys had to report to their teams for mandatory minicamp. But I think he enjoys being kind of a refuge for guys who really want that individual training and technique work when they're able to get it. So I think he's kind of relishing in that role and likes kind of operating as his own entity, I would say.
Garrett Podell, CBS Sports. Great read here on Duke Manyweather, offensive line coach to the stars here in the NFL. Thanks for the read and for your insights here on the show, and enjoy the rest of your offseason, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. Would love to talk soon.
There he goes, Garrett Podell, CBS Sports, here in the G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Yeah, that's big time to have him right here. You know, the amount of detail those guys can get. I do think it's probably pretty important that you be on the same page with the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's great that he got the endorsement there from the new O-line coach.
And that's a difficult group to have to work with because, and I'm talking about not the players but the coaches. You know, these line coaches kind of see themselves as on their own island. You know, they're a, hey, you know, we're supposed to be the engine. If everything's going bad, it's probably because of us. So they kind of take that role on of like being very much, you know, me and my guys.
Yeah.
And to be a good coach nowadays, you got to be able to share your guys. You got to be able to, these players have their own doctors, they have their own dietitians, they have their own trainers. You got to be, there used to be a time you would get all mad about that.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get mad anymore. If they're going to guys like Duke and you can see that they're getting better working with him, you got to embrace that and try and kind of build on the stuff that he's able to do.
It's a shame that they can't train more in the offseason with the teams, you know. And I think all players have to be very diligent about finding the right position coach that they can continue to work with in the offseason that's going to add skills that your team's coaches, you know, also value. So it's tricky, but it's great to have Duke here in town. A nice job by Garrett, giving more details and a guy you hear a lot about, actually, throughout the season. You'll get a lot of Duke Manyweather references and stories.